Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Genuinely Grace, and it's lovely to be with you, and it's been another ridiculously busy week, and I've been feeling really under the weather. I had a couple of days where I really wasn't well at all, and I did a little Instagram kind of piece about this because it just made me remember what life was like when I was drinking. I just thought back, you know. Okay, so I've not been well for a couple of days. You know, it's just life, isn't it? You get better again. But it made me realize that that used to be the norm. It used to be just normal to kind of feel a bit wobbly and a bit shaky and not quite right. And we would just take it in our stride, so many of us. And maybe you still are. Maybe you're still settling for less. It's that thing of like, why are we okay to settle for not feeling as well as we can feel? It just really took me back. And I know you've heard me say a thousand times, but if there's a food that disagrees with us, that we're intolerant to or allergic to, once we discover we're allergic to said food, we would never have that food again. Not in a million years. Not if we could help it. I mean, we'd be super careful and looking at menus and asking our hosts if we go out for dinner to make sure that they haven't snook some in. And yet, because we don't want to feel ill, right? And yet with alcohol, we do exactly the same thing the next night. We know that it's toxic. We know that it makes us feel ill. And then the next night we do it all again. Just bizarre. So anyways, I'm hugely grateful to feel better. And just what a reminder that I used to settle for that feeling a little bit crap the whole time. And I really hope if you're still in that trap, just you so owe it to yourself to get out. You can do it. Now, of course, it's October coming up. So the whole world is going to be talking about Sober October. And you will have seen some of the stuff I post around this. Of course, I'm a fan in that as much as we can do to raise awareness of how much better life is without the booze, then fantastic. I love it. I love the fact that there will be bars and restaurants that will have some extra alcohol-free drinks they might not usually have had, so that they'll open it up. I love the fact that people won't feel quite as sober shamed, perhaps, because they're doing a challenge. I love all of that. I do. But, and I knew, you knew that there was a but, I really hate the focus on give up. You know, the focus is all about, oh, make this sacrifice, do it for charity, give some of your hard-earned cash to charity by sacrificing your alcohol intake. So that, in fact, one of the ads I heard, I think it was last year, actually said words to the effect of, how much better are you going to feel about yourself when you have that pint, when you have that first pint? You know, you're going to feel really worthy that you've donated money to charity. And oh my goodness, it's just all so mixed up, so confused. It should be nothing to do with giving up and sacrificing. You're only gaining. And yes, of course, if you want to give money to charity, that's fantastic. I'd suggest that you choose a charity and you give money at any time. But right now, if you're going to do Sober October, do it because you want to see how much better you feel or how much you can focus on what life is like without drinking. Don't focus on what you're giving up, because you ain't giving up nothing. There is nothing to give up. Just focus on everything that you're gaining. And also, you know, of course, I would say go sober, not just for October, because I don't know how much good it does for your body if you just do a month. I guess it's better than nothing. But really, this is about so much more than a little health fad. And, it, you know, I could go on and on, couldn't I? Do this for you. Do this because it's the best thing you will ever do for your health and well-being. And if only someone had told me how freaking fantastic life is without the booze, I can tell you now, I'd have done it a lot sooner. If you do want support, though, if you want support and you are, you know, it's kickstarting you, that's a good thing. If you're listening to this because you're going to be doing Sober October, don't let me put you off. Of course, it's a good thing to be doing. But please focus on what you're gaining. I've done a little, there's like a little PDF thing that was a bunch of questions and it's free and you can just download it. I'll put it in the show notes. I'll put the link on social media. You'll find it on thesoberclub.com. You literally just click the link and it gives you a few questions to kickstart you, to sort of get you thinking about how you drink currently and how your life might be better without. It's called Get the Buzz Without the Booze, Sober October. So I'll put the link to that. And as I say, it's a free download. You may as well have a listen, or rather have a write some of the answers down. You may as well, got nothing to lose. And you may as well have a listen to many of my podcasts, because that can sometimes be the thing. Just get yourself inspired. I met someone the other day who'd gone right back in the archives, and I think she'd got to episode 150, and she was feeling suitably inspired to continue. And that's the thing, isn't it, really? We've just got to do whatever it takes to keep us in that loop. And obviously, being connected is a very big part of it. Don't do this on your own. If you are doing Sober October, don't just rely on your work colleagues or your family or your friends to go alongside you. Yeah, they might not. But get yourself connected with like-minded people who will become your cheerleaders. And obviously, I'd love it if you join us in the Sober Club, but do whatever works for you, but get some connection. Be with people who somehow, whether it's online or in person, who lift your spirits a little bit and give you the feeling, the sense that this is really worth doing. So obviously in the Sober Club, we have an exclusive Facebook group. It's very small. It's very supportive. It's non-judgmental. We also have a huge member portal of content, and we have regular meetups online. So we've got one next week. I think it's October the 3rd. We've got an online meetup. So join us before then. And we'll give you lots of motivation and encouragement and absolutely no judgment. I mean, we've all been there, let's face it. We've all been where you are now, if you're early days or if you're sober curious. We've all been there. And I just wish I'd had a few more people to cheer me on in the early weeks and months. So we're here for you. And if you are doing this, reach out. If you don't want to join the Sober Club, just reach out. Let someone know you're doing it. Because if you try and hole up, that's when the wine witch comes in and says, well, don't be ridiculous. I mean, come on, you may as well just have one. So tell somebody that you're doing this thing. We had a great Sober by the Sea last weekend, by the way. It was so lovely to meet some people who are kind of a few starting out on their journey, a few been sober for a long time, but just focusing on what we want for the future was just really, really magical, being able to create a vision board and focus on what it is we want. And I think that when we start to recognize we can take back a little bit of control, that's when it makes absolutely all the difference. So watch this space for what we're doing next in terms of Sober by the Sea. And in terms of events generally, I've mentioned already that we've got Family Constellations on Sunday, October the 15th. I really hope some of you can join us for that big, tricky concept to explain, but have a read of some of my blog posts at thesoberclub.com and come along to Family Constellations if that interests you. It's in Hertfordshire, Sunday 15th of October. Still got some spaces left. The day before that, if you are a coach or a practitioner or a therapist, or maybe you've got a small business, then we're doing a heart-centered business day. That'll be really good the day before. So drop me a message if that's of interest. And then at the end of October, there's a meetup in Manchester, which is organized by Andy Blackman from After Party. I'm going to be speaking at that. Really looking forward to that event in Manchester. And then in November 4th and 5th, we've got our self-care and sobriety retreat at Champneys, which is Champneys in Tring. Be amazing to see you for that one. And then into December, we've got a live podcast meetup on December the 5th. Give you more information about that in due course. So there's a few things going on. This weekend, I'm going off to spend the weekend with Susan from Hola Sober. Can't wait to see her at her gathering. So there's an awful lot going on. But really, for me, as much as for anybody, connection, it's so important. It is just the absolute key. meeting like-minded people. It doesn't matter if they're at the same stage as you. You know, in the Sober Club, we've got people who are sober curious, and we've got people who have been sober for 13 years. It doesn't matter, because we're all focusing on the what's next, right? And we're all able to cheerlead each other for whatever it is that we want in our lives. This week's guest, I should tell you about, is a lot of fun this week. I just got a message from Freddie Bennett, and I thought, well, you sound like one interesting guy, and really this is all about resilience. Freddie Bennett went from stressed, depressed and drunk to Guinness World Record holder, ultramarathon winner and endurance athlete. There's so much here, so much here. I'm not going to get into all this till I've said hello to Freddie. How are you, Freddie?
Hello, Jenny. I am very well, thank you. How are you doing?
Good. Yeah, I'm really good. Your CV, it's really fascinating. We're going to have to dig into some of it. But first of all, I must say, I'm very impressed that you're willing to do this recording with me at some absolutely ungodly hour, because you're in New Zealand, right?
I am indeed. Yeah. So I moved out to New Zealand about 3 years ago. But just as we were saying before we started recording, not like I've got a hangover. So
yeah, there is that.
Sobriety, isn't it? You can do it, have an early start. And you could just be so much more productive that up early, make things happen, get things done and achieve what we want to achieve. So this is a great start of the day.
Absolutely. So I know that, you know, one of your kind of missions really is to just help us recognize that, you know, you can change your future, you know, whatever might have happened in your past. So let's just go back in time then. Tell us a bit about your kind of previous life, as it were, when you were that stressed, depressed corporate executive.
Well, I'm happy to. And they say that everybody has a talent. And quite early on in my life, I discovered that I had a talent for drinking. I did the traditional route of, you know, we're all teenage drinkers, then went to university, discovered that I certainly was building this talent for drinking. And then I went into the corporate world in London, working in the city, totally out of my comfort zone. You know, I was the first person in my family to go to university, the first person in my family to have a proper job, if you will. My certainly from my father's side of the family, they all came from around Birmingham, and my dad's dad actually supplied horses in the 1920s and 30s to a group of gentlemen who are today known as the Peaky Blinders.
How cool!
That's the kind of circles that my family moved in. So I was like, no, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to go and get a proper job that gives me a paycheck, where I could wear a suit to work and just have a nice, normal life. It all started off quite well, except in this environment, I felt like an imposter. I felt like I was out of my comfort zone. Everyone else knew the things to say. Everyone else knew the way to act. And I was just feeling my way through it. And in the corporate world, I mean, this was back in around 2004, 2005. It was maybe a different kind of time. There was even more alcohol than there is now. You know, there was team drinks and networking drinks and client drinks and midweek drinks and end of week.
And going to the pub at lunchtime. I remember that from my radio days.
Pubs at lunchtime and everyone having cigarettes and all these things. And I rapidly realized that if I had a few drinks, I was funnier and I was more confident. And then people would want to be around me more. And I would get drunk, kind of creep into the office, hungover the next morning, thinking, oh, I'm in trouble here. And the boss would high-five me and he'd say, oh, Freddie, what a legend. You were brilliant last night. You were such fun. And I thought, oh, okay. So I'm in this environment where the more I drink, it seems that the more outgoing and outrageous I am, the more people like me. I can deal with this. So I would drink more and more. And I created this whole persona. It sounds like a real arsehole thing when I look back, but I used to call myself Funtime Freddy. Funtime Freddy for drinks. Funtime Freddy was the first in the bar, the first person to get the shots in, first person in the nightclub, first person to get thrown out of the nightclub. And this continued. And when you're 22, it can be a bit fun. When you're 32, and then by that stage, I was married. I had a couple of young children. it's not quite as fun. And
yeah,
the warning signs started to be there. I had the, as we all do, I started to be later for work and then be hungover at work and then be missing work. And then I had the incident at the work conference when I locked myself out of my hotel room at 3 o'clock in the morning, naked.
In a hotel
that was full of my colleagues, and I was just there without any glasses or contact lenses, kind of staggering around the corridors, hiding my modesty with a pot plant, thinking I really hope my boss doesn't walk around the corner. And then I had an instance like in New York. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and I'd ended up having a drug dealer holding a gun to my head and threatening to pull the trigger. And these incidents, these unfortunate coincidences seem to happen more and more frequently. But in my mind, it was stress, it was unfortunate bosses, it was difficult clients, it was uncomfortable projects, it was unfortunate circumstances with drug dealers. It was all these different things that were to blame. And it absolutely could not be my drinking. And if you said to me, maybe you need to cut down your drinking. I don't have a drinking problem. I've got a job. I don't wake up on park benches. I earn good money. I've got a Porsche on the driveway. I've got granite in the kitchen. I've got a Rolex on my wrist. I can't have a drink problem because I have a responsible, successful life and career. And I was willing to look everywhere. I was willing to consider every problem, every blame, every fault, except looking in the mirror and saying to myself, Freddie, you have got a drink problem. And if you don't fix this problem, then you're on a one-way ticket and a one-way journey to disaster, both professionally and personally.
Yeah, absolutely. So what changed it then, Freddie? I mean, obviously, within all of this, you were obviously enjoying your athletics, or did that come later?
It's important to say when I start these things and we hear the introduction and people hear about the world records and the endurance athletes and the running across the Sahara Desert, it's a strange thing to say, but I'm not a runner. I don't really like running. And we get our ideas in our minds about, you know, the lycra-clad runner who loves to run and talks about running and all they do is run. I don't really like running, Jamie. I run because it sorts my mind out these days. I like to challenge myself, but I'm sure we'll come into that. But I am not a athletic person naturally, especially back in my drinking days. I could run a bar tab very well, but I certainly couldn't do any exercise. And like many men in particular, I was quite athletic as a teenager. University, it kind of went a bit less athletic. In the world of work, I'd maybe stagger to the gym and then go to the pub on the way home. I actually used to try and go for a run to make myself feel better, and I would take a cigarette with me on that run to have halfway round, just for an energy boost, as wow. I used to say. So I was not athletic at all, but the moment when things changed was actually with my father. And he was, my dad was a heavy drinker, heavy smoker, very flamboyant. Again, the life and soul of the party. He told me it was okay to not have an off switch, to be this all or nothing personality. And one day I was at work in my client's office, hungover as always, and doesn't really work on a podcast because I can't do the picture. But if you imagine someone slumped in their desk with their chin in their hand, absently tapping at a keyboard, just waiting for 5 o'clock to come round, and the phone rang, there was someone on the end of the line saying, "Your dad's in hospital, and it doesn't look good." And I was in Manchester at the time. I had to walk out of the office, just with my suit and my laptop bag, jump in my car, drive 300 miles to Bristol, where my dad was, and walk into the hospital, and he was there in intensive care. And it was that day that everyone knows about and everyone thinks about, but everyone hopes will not happen to them, where I was having a normal hungover lunchtime, and then by dinner time, I watched my dad die. And that was, and as actually I was thinking this morning, it's that anniversary is coming up in a couple of days' time. And you could call it, that was the moment where everything changed. When I had a crash course in life being short and life being, and I thought, and I still think today, there would have been a moment on that day, because he didn't know he was going to die on that day either. And there would have been a moment when he thought, oh, heck, my time's up. And he would have thought all the regrets that he had, all of the time wasted, hungover, all of the arguments, all of the misdemeanors, all of the things that he did that he shouldn't have done, all the things that he wants to do that he didn't do. And he would have had all of those regrets. And I thought, I don't want that to be my life. And the Hollywood version of this story is that I walk out of the hospital and the sunshine shines on me. And I think, this is going to be the moment, Freddie. This is the moment when you change your life. The truth is, for the next 6 months, I drank more. I partied more. I had even more reckless abandon, because I thought, well, you only live once. Why have that life of regret? I will say yes to that fifth shot of tequila. I will go to Las Vegas for the weekend. I will do all these crazy things because life is short, right? And so I went even more out of control because I was angry with myself. I was angry with the world. I was angry with
myself. Yeah, it's almost like a kind of a self-sabotage, isn't it, from what you're saying? Well, I really recognise that. I went through something similar where I absolutely knew something had to change, but then for some bizarre reason, I carried on for another 6 months.
Exactly. And I find that we cannot outperform and we cannot outdrink our own self-image. And I had a self-image of someone who was angry, who was bitter, who was resentful, and who was quite sad. And I was punishing myself then through drinking. And then it was one unspectacular morning. I remember it was a Thursday morning, 8th of March. I woke up again in a grey hotel room in a grey part of the UK on a grey morning, hungover again. And then I looked at myself in the tiny bathroom mirror of this budget hotel, and I looked at my bloodshot, hungover eyes and my pale, wrinkled skin and my beer belly and my chipped yellow teeth. And I just looked at myself and I just thought, Freddie, you are wasting your potential. And I had tried so many times to change my drinking habits. I tried to use willpower. I'd read the books. I'd done the courses. I'd listened to the podcasts. I'd done so many things to change my drinking. And every single time I'd failed, and I was ready to give up hope and end it all. And I thought, why not just give myself one more chance? Why not just try to see what you're truly capable of? And then that's what I realized. It was the turning point for me wasn't about using willpower, because in the past, willpower had always failed. I realized that we cannot change ourselves using willpower alone. We need to change ourselves using an idea. And I had to create this new version of myself that I wanted to be more. I had to want this new version of Freddie to exist more than the old version. And I knew for this new version to appear, I would have to do the thing that I didn't want to do, which was give up alcohol. And I always say, if you want the things you've never had before, you must do the things you've never done before. And for me, the one thing that I'd never done before was change my drinking habits. So going from there, I thought, if I want to create this Freddie 10.0, this 10 out of 10 version of myself, if I want to be who I know I can be, then I need to stop drinking for a while. And I did my 90 days. And then I went to 6 months, and then I went to a year, and it wasn't perfect. It wasn't easy. And it wasn't always the silver bullet, but it was the turning point for me that made me think, if I can do this, if I can quit this habit, then what else can I achieve? And then that's when everything on the adventure started to begin.
So, tell us a bit about the adventure then, because presumably, I mean, you had to extricate yourself from your corporate job, did you?
I did. And the corporate extraction was a slow one, because I, as many of us in the corporate world have done, we turn around and we say, right, I'm that's it, everyone. I'm going sober. I'm quitting the drink. I'm doing 30 days. I'm doing 19 days. First of all, everyone says, yeah, right. But, you I'm talking to, there's no way you can do that. And then you get the unhelpful characters that say, are you coming to the pub at lunchtime, which really didn't help. And then there's the stressful day when you think, oh, I could just murder a drink right now. I've had a bad day. I've had a good day. I've had a Wednesday, whatever. There's always an excuse for another drink. So I was in the corporate world for another couple of years, which was tough because my identity had to totally change. My crutch as such that I could always fall back on was then taken away. So I had to try and navigate through that. And that involved being a bit less social and more disciplined and thinking, what do I want more? Do I want this new version of myself, or do I want to go back to the old version of me? So every day was a crossroad. Every day was a decision. Do I want to move towards growth, which is uncomfortable and involves an uncomfortable decision? Or do I want to move back towards comfort, which is very nice in the short term, but I knew wasn't going to serve me in the long term. But as I started to become this, as I say, this new version of me, this real version of me, I did start to shine a light on the areas of my life that I knew I wasn't happy with, yet was unwilling to acknowledge. And that was for life. And I thought, was I really put on this planet to fill out spreadsheets and be told what to do by people who don't like me? And I don't really like them very much either. That is the power of sobriety. It makes us understand who we really are.
It really does. Yeah. And that whole sense of, you know, okay, is there something more for me? Is there something that I really want to do? I really love that, this aspect of people ditching the booze when they start to ask these questions, you know, am I happy? You know, am I doing what I'm meant to do? Which, of course, for everyone isn't, you know, massively exciting things. You know, I said on a podcast not long ago with Kyle Gray, you know, sometimes your purpose is just to be happy. But that's pretty cool in itself. But it just enables you to have that bravery, doesn't it? And clearly what you had going on here was that, you know, that adventurous spirit and that sense of, you know what, I'm going to be brave and do something completely different.
Absolutely. And it is a terrifying question if anyone's ever asked themselves, what do you want? And truly sit with that question. What do you want? Because we all say a bit more money, a bit more time, a bit more happiness, a bit more confidence. On the surface level, we all say those things. But then when you really sit with it, when you really go deep down and say, what do I actually want? And it can be for me, certainly, it was a confronting, confusing question. But there's one phrase that I love. And when we try and work out our purpose, especially, as you say, when we change our drinking habits, we always do start to question ourselves. And it can be confusing. And we say, what do I actually want? What is my purpose? And all these big questions. I believe you are best positioned to serve the person that you used to be. And that was true for me. So I think, am I best positioned to serve that person potentially in the corporate world or potentially even with working in their job in a stressful life who is drinking too much? How could I show them that anything is possible? And that was certainly, as you say, with my adventurous spirit. And it's also important to say, whilst I'm not a runner, I also don't expect people to be crazy enough to want to do things that I've done, like running across the Sahara Desert or the Guinness World Records or my next challenge, which is running across the Arctic. I know that's slightly crazy. I know that's that's very much my all or nothing personality. But I do believe that whilst for me it was the Sahara Desert, for somebody else it would be writing a book or starting a hobby or starting a or starting a relationship or ending a relationship or going on an adventure. We all have that thing that we want to do yet somehow doubt our ability.
Well, yeah, and have been putting off. You know, I think when we're drinking, it's very easy, isn't it, to just say, oh, well, I'll do that when, you know, when the kids leave home, or I'll do that when this, oh, I'll do that when the job ends, I'll do that when I'm retired. You know, and it's that tomorrow never comes thing, isn't it? You're not going to get away without telling me how some of this stuff came about though, Freddie, because I mean, come on. I mean, ultra marathon winner, what even is that? Endurance athlete. I mean, I don't understand. How on earth do you even... How do you choose to go across the Sahara Desert? Wasn't it too hot?
It was very hot. We got to 50 degrees, for American listeners, that's what, over 120 degrees Fahrenheit. But it's exactly as you said it, Janie. This race, the Marathon des Sables, it's the Marathon of the Sands. It's known as the world's toughest foot race. 300 kilometers across the Sahara Desert.
Wow.
Seven marathons in 6 days. You have to carry all of your own food and equipment on your back for the whole time. You sleep in the dirt, in the sand. There's none of this kind of run around in the desert and then go back to the hotel for a swim and a cool drink. You're self-sufficient. Your water is rationed. So if you can imagine, you're there in the deadliest place on earth. You have to run a marathon and then you sleep in the sand. You have to get up, run another marathon, get up, run another marathon, get up, run another. And then it's a long day where there's two marathons back to back, 56 miles. Can't have a shower. Took one spare change of underwear. It was a real treat halfway through the week to change into that. And it's the toughest race on the planet across the deadliest place on the planet. And I'd always wanted, I don't know why, but there was something about this race that always called me for years. And I was the guy in the pub who was propping up the bar, say, I'm going to run this race one day. I'm going to get fit one day. I'm going to do this crazy race one day. And I always talk to like many of us do when we drink, I should do this. I'm going to try. Call it a victim language. A victim always talks like, I'm going to do that when the world's not against me. I should do this sometime. I'm thinking about doing this. But when I stopped drinking, I thought, well, why not do it? And I found myself there one day, just, I was a browser. I'd always be on the website. I'd be reading up about it. I'd be the expert in this thing, but never actually taking any action to make it happen. And then one day I saw there were places available. So I took out my credit card there and then, booked my ticket as such, booked my place. Told my wife, she burst into tears and said, oh my goodness, you're going to die. You can't run me. Because my running experience until then, I'd done the London Marathon in 2012, and I'd been drinking and training, which I thought I was very, very clever at with my drinking training program. Everyone said the London Marathon is, oh darling, it's the most wonderful event. Oh, the crowd, oh, the atmosphere. Worst day of my life. I cried. I sat on the pavement. I walked it. It took me 6 hours. And people were like, you remember what happened at the London Marathon, don't you, Freddie? And now you're running the toughest race in the world.
Yeah.
And I said, and it was like the metaphor of our sobriety journeys. I left the house one day. And I tried to go around the block and I thought, I'm just going to try and do a bit today. And I went around the block and then a bit later on, I could go around the park and then I could do a park run. And then every day, step by step, I just tried to focus on what can I do today to go a little bit further towards my goal. And then I ordered a half marathon and then a marathon. It was an 18-month period between me booking my place and being in the Sahara Desert on the start line.
Wow.
In that month, I had to go from couldn't run a kilometer to say 300 across the desert.
I'm guessing you would say then that you know, there's no way that any of this would have happened if you were drinking then. It's not just that you have this, extraordinarily sort of adventurous spirit and you know, you love to challenge yourself. I mean, you said you did the London Marathon even when you were drinking, but is there any way that any of this could have happened if you were still on the booze?
No, it wouldn't have happened at all. I would have talked about it a lot. I would have talked to anyone that I'd probably still be there in the London pub now, telling everyone to have these big plans one day to run across the desert. I think no, for a couple of reasons. Firstly, I could have never done the training. As we all know, early morning runs on a Sunday aren't really a thing when you're drinking, in terms of the discipline, the time, the fitness, the weight, all these things that I was going in the wrong direction with my drinking. But the main area was certainly the confidence, the confidence to even try to keep going. Because I had some terrible training. I had got injured. I had all sorts of barriers and roadblocks to get through. But I always find when we go through a sobriety journey, as we all like to call it, the confidence doesn't always come from 100 days alcohol free or 200 days alcohol free or a year alcohol free, whatever it is. It's the confidence in ourselves that we are making the micro decisions every day. Again, we're making that choice towards growth and we're making the uncomfortable choice. And knowing that we're banking all of those choices again and again, I've chosen to not drink today. That's another penny in the confidence bank. I was at that wedding. I chose to not drink. That's another penny in the confidence. And as you build up that confidence time over time, and you look better, and you feel better, and you sleep better, and you don't have drugs and withholding guns to your head and things like that, which is always helpful. That confidence made me think, well, maybe if I can stop drinking for this period of time, then maybe I can do this. And I think that's a confidence boost for anyone. Anyone who can go a number of days alcohol free is capable of so much more than they can imagine. They can do they once thought impossible.
Your life really has, it's just changed. So you're 4 years sober now, aren't you? And literally, yes, it's just completely changed. Mm. Are you in touch with any of your sort of, old colleagues from from way back?
I am. I've got some good friends still from the corporate world. Yeah, we have the WhatsApp groups and everything else. I'm in New Zealand now, so I don't get to see them as often as I'd like. But it's funny. You find out who your friends are when you stop drinking. And I used to worry about that because, again, I had created this bubbly social persona and I loved it. And it's strange to say, I always want to be honest with these things. There are many occasions when I love that life. I love that buzz of walking into a bar and everyone going, yeah, Freddie's here. And they welcome you like a conquering hero. I'd be lying if I said I miss that sometimes. Mm. That buzz of being popular, of being the life and soul of the party. But sobriety helps us to understand who we really are. And maybe I don't have as many friends as I used to, or as many so-called friends I thought I had that I used to, but I have a much better relationship with myself. I can be comfortable in my own company. I can be comfortable on my own. I can be comfortable running along the beach and watching the sunrise. There's no better friendship than that. But it's funny when I talk to my friends, I talk about coming back to the UK. Even now, even after everything, they're like, oh, are you still doing that not drinking thing? Are you for a beer now, aren't you? And the crazy thing is, a small part of me thinks, maybe I could. It's been 4 years now. Come on. Just you've been away for a long time. You could just have one. Maybe just drink now when you're in England and don't drink. I still have that voice inside of my head that tries to give you that get up. Maybe you could just have a beer and not have spirit. Maybe you could.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? It's that little voice that tries to blindside us again until we're bright enough to answer back and say, well, it never actually was about the alcohol. It was only ever about the associations that you thought that would bring you, because it's never about the drink. If it was just about the drink, you could sit in your own home and you could have a nasty little bit of, horrible old warm alcohol in a broken plastic cup. But that's not what you ever meant in any part of you. It was only ever the associations, wasn't it? But it's interesting how years later your mind still tries to play tricks on you.
I know, and it's crazy, and it's such a cliche, but it is a journey, and that's why. Yeah, I always like to talk about the positive and the negative side of sobriety. And I think sometimes we fall into, and it's a strange thing to say, we fall into a trap glamorizing sobriety, I think, especially with social media and Instagram. And sometimes everyone thinks, oh, it's the silver bullet. It makes everything perfect. It's all sunshine and rainbows. It's all wonderful. Mm. And in my early days, I was thinking, this feels terrible. I thought I'd be richer. I thought I'd be better looking. I thought I'd be thinner. I thought everything in my life would be wonderful. And I remember thinking, hey, I want my money back. Sobriety's not giving me all these things. And then I realized that it isn't just it's not like a transaction where you say, right, I'm going to say no to alcohol now, and then I get all the good stuff. It is that lifelong journey that we have to go on. And maybe there will be still tough days, tough weeks, tough years. We will still fall out with people. We will still face massive problems in our lives. We'll still have people lie to us, betray us, leave us, all these bad things will still happen. But the fact that we haven't got a drink in our hand means that we have so much more power and confidence, calmness. Because if we think, if I can survive all of those hungover days, if I can make the right decision on so many occasions to say no to alcohol, that I can get through whatever today throws at me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. It we do, often there are sort of very high expectations that, within the first 2 weeks, you're going to, have masses of energy and feel incredible and sleep well and look great and God knows what. And life's not really quite like that, is it? So, I appreciate you kind of flagging that up. Well, so now you're going to have to tell me about this next absolutely bonkers thing that you're doing now. So what is this? 300 kilometers across the frozen Arctic? Talk about one extreme to the other then, obviously.
So I'm swapping sand for snow. And
wow.
The race through the desert really kick-started things for me. And like I say, this isn't about the adventurous stuff as such. It's about proving to the world that everyday people can do extraordinary things, that we could all do the thing that we thought we could not do. And we all thought at the stage that we couldn't stop drinking, but we did. So what else can we do? And a lot of this is for my children, to be honest, because I came back from the Sahara Desert and I kind of did the whole, I've got two boys who are now 11 and 8. They were younger when I did the desert, and I did the whole, son, are you proud of me? Are you proud of me? Look what I've done. Look at my medal. And my kids were like, nah, you've been going on about that race now for so long. Changed the record. So that led me to, ironically, completing the world record and being the world's fastest fisherman, which was running a marathon dressed as a fisherman, including heavy boots, which was a tough one. And then the Arctic was always one thing I wanted, because I went from the world's toughest ultramarathon to the world's coldest ultramarathon, and it's a similar format: 300 kilometers, 6 days, temperatures of minus 40, running across. Wow. Lakes, carrying all your equipment again, frostbite, polar bears, wolves, all these things. And people say this is a bit different, the Sahara Desert, because if you stop, you freeze. All these things we don't think about, like the food that you carry freezes, your water bottles freeze, all these different things that, again, like sobriety, we don't expect to encounter these different challenges, and these different areas appear. But
are there a group of you doing this then?
Yes, so it's a race, so it isn't just me kind of.
Oh, right, okay.
Going off into the wilderness, it is. My family's quite happy about that. It is an organized race, not just me off on a crazy adventure. But I do this for an important reason, again, because I find social media in particular sometimes, it's so full of the same old motivational quotes, the same old, you could achieve anything, your mind is your most powerful weapon. Everyone talks the talk. Everyone says the same things. Everyone throws empty motivational platitudes at you. And I know, because I was there, when you're feeling depressed, when you're feeling hungover, when you're feeling stressed, when you're feeling like a failure, because you keep on failing on your sobriety journey time and time and time again, as I did, having someone say to you, just be positive, just use your mindset, you could achieve anything, doesn't help you at all. And that's why that's really my mission, is to not just talk the talk, but to run the run in this case. And it's important to me to prove that we can achieve things that we thought impossible, that we can achieve goals that terrify us, that scare us. And I always say, if I can be that stressed, depressed, hungover, unfit, overweight office worker, if I can be that person and then go on to do the things that I've done and that I'll continue to do, then anyone can change their habits, that anyone can change their behaviors. Because as I say, I'm not a runner, I'm not an athlete, I'm just a broken down ex-corporate guy who thought, what could be possible if I stopped drinking and I started to become this 10 out of 10 version of myself? What kind of life could I create? And the fact that I did it, despite the the pain and the trauma and the disasters and the failures. And that's what I always say around sobriety and changing our drinking habits. And I'm someone who proudly failed 1,000 times. It doesn't matter how many times you fail. You only need to get it right once. And when you get it right that one time, then you win. Then your life can change forever. And that's why I do the Arctic. And that's why I'll continue to do these challenges, just to prove to people that every saint has a past, every sinner has a future. And the fact that we all have this new future if we decide to turn towards it.
Mm, absolutely. Well, it's hugely inspirational. It really is. What a story. It's amazing.
I like to do the difficult challenges so you don't have to. So
absolutely. Well, I can absolutely assure you that won't be happening. I mean, you know, it's interesting you say you don't like running. I mean, I really dislike running. And I actually made the mistake of, I got challenged by a bunch of my sober club members. We were on a retreat and I was, you know, giving them a not dissimilar chat about how, you know, you can go after whatever it is you want and set yourself challenges. So they challenged me to run, which I'd always said I absolutely bloody hated it. And so I did. And so I did Couch to 5K, hated every single moment of it. I did do it. I did complete it. I mean, I'm not exactly fast, but I did complete it in the however many weeks it is. Hated every second of it, really. Had about a kind of a 5-second glow of happiness that I'd completed it. But then after a couple of weeks, realized that I'd kind of injured my knee. I don't even remember ever injuring it. But, you know, then I was just like literally grumpy bear thinking, well, there you go, you see. I mean, on a serious note, are you not worried about injury?
I am worried about injury, especially, I mean, well, I'm going to be 42 when I do the Arctic race. So I tell myself I'm not getting old. I am. But yeah, I do worry about injury. I do worry about the long-term effects, but I also take precautions around it. And I do all the, cause I hate running. I really hate stretching. I really hate doing the more of the yoga side of things. But again, I believe that is a metaphor for our lives and for our journeys. We could always be worried about the what if, and what if this happens? What if I stop drinking and people don't like me? What if I don't like who I am when I stop drinking? There's always going to be a what if in our life. And we can take steps to control that. But at the end of the day, there is only so much that we can control. We can control our actions, our thoughts, our self-talk, our self-belief. Those are the things that we can control. So whilst I'll always try and minimize the risks, and especially my family would be very grateful if I minimize the risks, but I always have to focus on what I can control, and that is me. And as I said, I think that goes for sobriety as well. I can control what I put in my body. I can control the drink that I put up, and I also know on a medical note, if I did drink, then we know that the chances of injury are higher and all those sorts.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Note. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's very inspirational, as I say. I'm really impressed. You'll have to keep us up to date. So where can people find you? If you want to maybe share your Instagram, and then we can keep a check on how you're doing.
Yep, absolutely. So most of my my journey as such is lived through Instagram. I've a lot of people reach out to me, so I'm always happy to speak to people there. So my Instagram is at the Freddie Bennett. That's the FREDDIE. BENNETT.
Cool. Fantastic. I'll put that in the show notes as well. Freddie, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I really hope that experience is, I hope it goes well for you. Whatever that means, I really hope it goes well.
like life, it's all an adventure. And I just show that if we can change our drinking habits, then we can change ourselves, and we can change ourselves, we can change the world. And
absolutely. Yeah, love it. Thanks ever so much, Freddie. Really appreciate it.
Perfect. Thank you, Janie.
So I hope you enjoyed that. Someone else, isn't he? Freddie Bennett, really just amazing. So I really hope you enjoyed that podcast. And don't forget, if you want support, connection, if you want to up your resilience and you want some cheerleading, then do check out thesoberclub.com. Join us in the Sober Club for just so much support and accountability, and masses and masses of amazing inspirational content. Check out the events. It's all there under the events page. And if you do want to contribute to this work, it would be unbelievably nice of you if you go to buymeacoffee.com/genuinelygrace. Mine will be a flat white if we're meeting in person, but you can buy me a coffee there, which is great. You can go to thesoberclub.com and you can contribute to our give back fund. Even if you don't want to join us as a member, that's always, we're always really grateful for that. And if you've got a brand or a business and you would like to sponsor the podcast, if you'd like to get involved and collaborate with us on the podcast, you'd be very welcome. You get to reach an audience who care about the same kind of stuff as you do. So what's not to like? You can just drop me a message. I'm very easy to find on social media. At Janie Lee Grace. Make sure you follow me. Just a reminder then, if you are doing Sober October, obviously I would say go sober, not just for October, but you know, you've got to start somewhere. We all have. So please go to thesoberclub.com, click on blog, and you'll see there a little PDF that you can just click into and download for free. And it gives you a few questions to get you kickstarted. It's quite nice to just get your mind working that way. I'll also put the link to that PDF in the show notes for this episode. So have yourself a great week. If you are doing that Sober October thing, keep going, tell someone, focus only on what you're gaining. You got to promise me that. See you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.